This is the Jon Favreau is My Daddy podcast with Jessica Garcia and Monica Montoya.
But our theme song scared Monica.
I hate everything.
What a joyous way to begin this episode. You guys are going to have to forgive Monica for this one. She's on muscle relaxants. So.
Yeah, baby. what's up, man? How's it going?
You know, it's been a morning already. It is 11 a.m. I'm not wearing a real bra.
Listen, I'm not wearing a real bra. I think my bra is just like a tank top cut from
Same.
Like the top
It's
down.
Like a little crop top situation going
like
on
that.
Under here.
I don't know. It's like Tommy something or other.
Is this too R-rated for the podcast?
Maybe. I want to ask, does anyone know that women wear bras?
No, Monica. People don't know that.
We did say that this podcast would have spoilers, so sorry. Spoiler,
women wear bras.
Women wear bras.
Well, also women don't wear bras, too. So
Yeah, that's true.
Do what you want.
We are not wearing real bras. Do what you want, baby.
Anyway. How are you today, Monica?
I'm good. I recently bought these new straws that have like a silicone tip. I'm a biter. So it's really important for me to have like something to chew on. Really like get in between.
That sounded a lot more sexual this time than it did when you told me about it a few minutes ago.
I don't mean it like that. I wear a night guard. It's probably the most like unsexy thing one could possibly have. So, no. I just mean like when I try to bite a metal straw, I'm not trying to chip my tooth with this like little silicone nibbly. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Maybe night guards are sexy to some people. Like I was watching Charlie's Angels yesterday with Sean.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Sean is my boyfriend, for those who don't know his name. So we were watching it and there's the scene where Cameron Diaz like gets out of bed and she takes her night guard out and starts dancing in front of the mirror and he goes, "Oh, she takes out her night guard. That's so cute." And I was like, "You think night guards are cute? Like what the fuck?
Where is this cute night guard?"
Night guard, I don't know. And he goes, "No, her taking it off is cute." And I was like, "Oh, so you can't handle the before."
Got it. I understand now. So me without a night guard is fine. And yeah. Cameron Diaz without a night guard is cute. I get that. I get it. I do like that scene where she's like dancing on her bed.
Oh,
it's like painfully awkward.
It's so good. And she like turns her butt to the mirror. And
I know. She's like shakes it. It's so fucking funny. She's wearing like the dumbest underwear.
She's wearing like Superman underwear or something.
It's so good.
And then the UPS guy comes to her door and she goes, "Just feel free to stick it in my slot."
That's good filmmaking. That is good filmmaking.
Charlie's Angels is the best movie ever made.
They recently had a reboot about it.
Yeah,
the one
where
the girls were singing, the three girls, Miley Cyrus and the two others.
You mean Kristen Stewart?
No. I'm talking about the song. Kristen Stewart is the one, probably.
She's in the reboot. I thought that's what you meant.
Yeah, I mean like Kristen Stewart in the reboot. Yeah, I'm talking about that reboot. But I'm talking about the song.
Oh, I didn't realize
that came with that reboot.
I'm sorry. I thought you were just referring to the reboot, not the song.
I am referring to the reboot, but the song about the reboot.
I understand now. That was unclear.
My logic is fucking solid. You're just not hopping on this fucking Vulcan planet here.
I cannot keep up. Anyway.
Sorry we went on a tangent there, folks.
Okay. Charlie's Angels has nothing to do with who we're going to talk about today.
Not even, honestly, they have nothing in common.
How many degrees apart are they? Probably not many.
Wait, has he done anything with any of these girls? Not in that way. I mean, like, worked with.
What?
Oh, who?
Aaron, tell us.
Eddie Murphy and Cameron Diaz were both in Shrek.
Oh, you're right. Eddie Murphy. So they're only one degree.
It's one degree
it's
of
one
separation.
It's 1 degree of separation between Eddie Murphy and Cameron Diaz. Spoiler alert, guys. Where our episode today is about
Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so good.
Yeah. It was fitting because he too is a singer.
He's an incredible singer. And yeah. In one of these films, mm-hmm. he sings and it's excellent.
Yes.
Can you guess?
I was like, wait, which of those movies?
He's actually really good. Yeah, but yeah, 1 degree of separation from Charlie's Angels because he and Cameron Diaz are both
in Shrek.
Shrek.
I wonder, did they, I mean, I don't know how they like made that movie, but I wonder if they ever like had any like acting time together. Probably not.
Probably not. It's an animated flick.
They probably met at like the premiere.
Maybe they're like, oh, you.
You.
Fiona. Fiona. Shrek. Wait, no, Donkey.
Donkey.
Oh, no. I'm getting a phone call.
Oh.
Who do you think it could be?
Is it your Peloton bike? Monica ordered a Peloton bike, right. Everyone, that's being delivered today.
Let's see. And we're back.
We are back from Monica's Peloton delivery.
Yeah. I'm not rich, but I needed a bike. So here we are.
I hear they have a great payment plan.
They have a fantastic payment plan. 0% APR. Get your Peloton bike now. It took 6 weeks to get here, so I'm just glad that it's in my office now.
It's finally here.
It's chilling. I stuck my like big toe through the loop to like get the pedal going. Just to see if it worked. It does.
It does. It's it is a working bike.
It's a working bike. You know, review to come.
You can look forward to that next week on the pod. Okay, so anyway, today we're talking about Eddie Murphy. You know him.
You love him.
Probably. I feel like Monica and I were discussing this a little bit before today and about how like when we were growing up, mm-hmm. I feel like it was kind of the time in Eddie Murphy's career when a lot of people were like shit talking him.
Yeah.
And it was after he had his, you know, like
trouble with the law,
which was real dumb. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people just kind of viewed him as like a troublemaker, as like angry and like kind of
wild
mean and wild. Yeah.
We were talking about how like it's definitely the narrative that the media pushed because mm-hmm. recently Jessica watched an interview with Eddie Murphy and she sent it to me. We both watched it. Where he was like a lot more soft spoken.
Yeah. It was a Jimmy Fallon interview where he was basically like asking Eddie Murphy to confirm or deny like classic Eddie Murphy rumor stories.
Right.
And Eddie Murphy was like, yeah, I don't care. Like, bring super it on, chill. Whatever. And
I thought he was stoned.
He was like, yeah, I mean, he might have been stoned, but who cares, man? But yeah, he was just like super chill, super nice, like laughing the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I sent it to Monica and I was like, I feel like this is the exact opposite of the Eddie Murphy that I was told about by the media when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's really easy to push the narrative of like the angry black man,
or the
hyperactive black man.
Oh, it definitely has a lot to do with like racism in uh-huh. the world and in Hollywood in general.
Just in general too. I think that his talent and like his perseverance, I mm-hmm. think is the reason why he is where he is today.
Yeah.
And like, you know, when I was watching these films, or rather like rewatching them for this podcast, I in particular watched, when I was watching Beverly Hills Cop, I noticed like he is really chill and soft-spoken, and like that translates to his acting. Mm-hmm. And he only like comes out of that when he needs to, or like when he's trying to be funny, or when he's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
But like when he's like really going, pushing over the top, but like his demeanor and his natural state of being is very chill and soft-spoken, and you know, and his skin is glistening in that
film. Oh my
film.
God, yes.
But I just in general, which is I think is a good thing to sort of look back on, is remembering that like he was not necessarily as wild as, you know, we were necessarily told he was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he did get a lot of shit for all of his like homophobic humor in the 80s, yep. which, you know, rightfully so.
Indeed.
But he's done like multiple interviews since, issuing lots of apologies and being like, I don't. Like, I was a stupid kid then. I knew nothing. And, like, that's not who I am. And so I think it's important to remember Eddie Murphy now.
Yeah, his evolution.
Yeah.
The Ed-evolution.
The Eddie Murphy evolution.
The Ed-evolution of Murphyism. But we love him. He's an absolute powerhouse. I'm really excited to talk about him.
Yeah, so I'm going to give you a little background info on him. In case you didn't know, Eddie Murphy is an actor, singer, and comedian considered to be one of the greatest comedians of all time by many. We just listened to his song Party All the Time.
Party All the Time.
Which is an absolute bop if you like 80s music.
I love 80s music.
He's got some other songs too. I recommend lots from the Dreamgirls soundtrack where his voice is absolutely incredible.
It shines,
it's
baby.
It's so good. So he was on Saturday Night Live from 1980 to 1984, where he was the only cast member to also host the show while being a regular still, like part of the cast. And he was there during Lorne Michaels' hiatus, and many of the cast members credit him for like revitalizing the show and being what kept it like down while Lorne wasn't there. He made his feature film debut in 1982 in 48 Hours, for which he received a Golden Globe nomination. He's been nominated for every major acting award, including an Oscar nomination for his role in Dreamgirls, winning a Golden Globe and a SAG award for that same role. Eddie Murphy is also a literal daddy to 10 babies.
10 children.
They're not all babies. There's adults now.
Can you imagine being a father to 10 children? I can't imagine that shit. Fuck that. That's crazy. I mean, kudos to him.
But, you know.
But.
I mean, I don't know, like, how he is as a father, but, like, right. He did reproduce 10 times.
Yeah. And he did procreate 10 times.
Yeah, and that's really where my evaluation ends, because I don't know anything about
him. I have no thoughts about him as a father, but I do find it fascinating that he has 10 children.
Really, when anyone has more than four, I'm really kind of, like,
I get
what?
Sweaty. Like, I get really sweaty, like, specifically, like, in my chest area and, like, my neck. I get really sweaty when I find out someone has, like, more than four kids. I'm like, oh, secondhand anxiety and stress. But kudos to everyone who has any children. It isn't quite a feat. And yeah. Him being a literal daddy to 10.
Maybe that's
Rug
why we
rats.
Love daddies. So today, per usual, talking about three films. Mm-hmm. You want to tell us what those films are, Monica?
I do. The first one, my favorite of the bunch, mm-hmm. ladies and gentlemen, the insane, the incredible mm-hmm. Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, baby.
Came out in 1984, a prime era.
Mm-hmm.
Written by Daniel Petrie Jr., story by Danilo Bach, and Daniel Petrie Jr. again, directed by Martin Brest.
Yeah.
Yes, the Brest of Friends. a little about the movie. Detroit PD's Axel Foley, played by, of course, Eddie Murphy, is a rebellious cop who goes to Beverly Hills in hopes of solving the murder of his childhood friend. Reluctantly aided by two LA detectives, Judge Reinhold and John Ashton, Foley disrupts the status quo of Beverly Hills law enforcement and uncovers the drug operation of a powerful local crime kingpin.
Yeah, baby. That was Monica trying to do like a siren.
But it didn't work.
It really didn't work.
This movie is iconic.
Yeah.
Just right off the bat. The
You've
theme.
Seen this movie a ton of times though,
so
right?
Many. I've okay. seen this movie so many
this
times.
This was my first time seeing this movie.
Oh, amazing. What'd you think?
I really, really liked it. But I will say, because it's been talked up so much and everyone's like, Beverly Hills Cop, iconic, iconic, iconic. I expected it to be like fall out of my chair funny.
Got it.
And it is not. It's a lot more understated humor,
yeah. mm-hmm.
which I really enjoyed. I'm just saying my expectations did not meet reality, but in like a perfectly fine way.
Right. This film has an iconic soundtrack.
Yes.
And a perfect theme.
Yeah.
We were just playing videos that included the theme before this podcast. And let me just say, chef's kiss. This movie is the 80s. Like, if you wanted to take the 80s and, like, put it into a film, like, this is it.
Yes. It has a lot of... I mean, I love Judge Reinhold from multiple things, but especially
the
Fast
Santa
Times.
Claus. Oh.
Or the Santa Claus. He does play Neil in The Santa Claus,
yeah,
the therapist,
Neil.
And he is fantastic at it. Like, that
so
movie,
good.
His role in that movie is, like, one of the smartest parts about that movie, I think.
So
but
good.
He's also in Fast Times at Ridgemont High and plays a really, really incredible character. So yes. If you like Judge, watch this movie. But also Eddie Murphy in this movie.
Fire.
He looks so hot in this movie.
His like I said earlier, his skin is like, I want to like jump into it.
Well,
like,
and
it's
he's
pool.
Always wearing this like cut off tees.
Yeah.
So his like beautiful toned arms are showing.
We love Eddie Murphy in this
and
film.
He does his like signature laugh in this movie too. But like signature before, I guess it was signature because this is one of his earliest movies.
And like what's her face, Lisa Eilbacher, the like love interest, mm-hmm. art curator woman.
Yeah.
She points, she like makes fun of his fucking laugh in the middle of the movie, mm-hmm. which I think is so funny because again, like you pointed out, it is not his iconic laugh yet. And she was already fucking making fun of it.
Yeah, I know.
Like, in the film.
I mean, he had been in movies, but, like, I was talking about this with someone the other day. This is, like, the movie that proved him to be a commercial success.
Yeah.
Because I think he had been in, like, 5 other movies that, like, did well. Like, he was in Trading Places and he was in 48 Hours. But, like...
This was it.
This was it. This was Beverly Hills Cop. This was the big times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about this movie is all the car sequences.
Okay.
And all the car sequences specifically involving all the cops.
Okay.
Because it just ends up being the fucking like cop pile up. A bunch of just fucking
like
cop
the end
cars.
Where they all like ram into each other.
They're just like cop car after cop car after cop car. Like, why do you need so many?
That ending like shootout was really
insane. I hate machine guns.
Same. If you don't like guns, maybe don't watch this movie because lots of moments where they're walking and all of a sudden like an AK-47 just starts fucking like going off,
ramming at them. But yeah, so specifically with this film, the soundtrack really makes this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, after a while, the theme obviously gets really repetitive, which I think is, you know, to the detriment of the film. Like, you sure. want to hear something that's not. After a while, like maybe you want to hear something else.
Yeah.
But I think all the other songs in this film are really amazing. And the beginning sequence is Chef's Kiss 80s. Love it.
Yes. It's super good. The music is super good. And I also think that this movie is really relevant today in a way that I didn't really expect because they.
Absolutely.
Like it really touches on like racism, especially within like law enforcement.
Yep.
Because he's a Detroit cop and he's like. He can do all this random shit and like go off on his own and like look into crimes. And they're not like pleased with him about it, but
mm-hmm.
nothing like really happens. And then he comes to LA and immediately gets arrested for not doing it.
No, for getting thrown out of a window.
Yeah, he gets thrown out of a window and he gets arrested in Beverly Hills. And so I think that's really interesting, particularly mm-hmm. now.
Yeah. And what I like. You know, what I like about this movie is his character, Axel, does not shy away from like calling people out on their bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
So in one of the, you know, in the beginning of the film, you know, his friend obviously tragically gets murdered.
Mm-hmm.
But before then, he's just a normal guy, like living his normal cop self, defying his boss all the time, being mm-hmm. one of those like classic rogue cops, which, by the way, if you have to like break the rules to do the right thing as a cop, the system does not work for you.
How shocking today, Monica.
That's so interesting that you have to like go against what the system tells you to do in order to do the right thing. Like
it's insane, isn't it?
But anyway, he's like he's getting shit from his boss for like going undercover. You know, dealing cigarettes and whatnot, what have you. Detroit things, just Detroit things. And he is telling his boss, like, you know, he's getting shit from his boss. He's like, I don't have like a side. Like, you told me your side. And his boss is like, well, you know what? You fucking cost me, like, cost the department a bunch of money. You cost, like, the city a bunch of money. And, like, that's what you did wrong is, like, you cost us money.
Yeah.
And he literally looks at him and he goes, like, I don't think this should be about, like, the cost, but, like, maybe, I don't know, my, like, blatant disregard for proper procedure or something. Which
he's so self-aware.
I know. He's like, excuse me, like, why is this about cost and why are you not, like, wringing my ass out to dry for disrespecting you and like disrespecting the procedure? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? But that moment in the it's in like the first act of the film, that moment really solidified to me like who that character was and like what he was bringing to the table, which was like realism, honesty, baby, no bullshit.
Well, I think if you haven't seen this movie, you just kind of think it's about like a wacky cop.
No, sir.
Which it's not about.
It's the opposite. So, you know, in this film, I really appreciate it because it shows like how fucked up and like whack this system is. So like the things you have to do the right thing are always, almost always in direct violation of the orders you were given.
Yeah.
Slash indirect violation of the law. So in this film, there are so many of those tiny moments and even bigger moments where, you know, the cops, both Beverly Hills cops and Axel.
Yeah.
Who is a Detroit cop. They're all put in situations where they have to decide, like, am I gonna like listen to my boss slash procedure slash the law and mm-hmm. like do the quote unquote right thing, like right in terms of procedure, or am I gonna like say no and do the quote unquote wrong thing to yeah. do the right thing?
Yeah.
Like just so many moments throughout the film that depicts the struggle.
Yeah. I think thematically that's like one of the most important parts of the movie. Like I think the most impressive thing about his performance in the movie is something that impresses me about Eddie Murphy in general is just that like it sounds dumb to say that like, oh, he's like so natural, but one of the most natural performers I've ever seen. He sits like so comfortably in the pocket of being like just being himself and being like everything comes so organically to him and he's so charismatic and the lines just like flow out of him as if he's saying them in real life. And I was shocked, and I've seen a lot of movies and like studied theater, and so like I've seen a lot of performances and I've never been so impressed. What was that?
Sorry guys, we're getting invaded.
There was just like a strange rumbly like alien noise going on.
Take me with you.
It was Eddie Murphy coming to take me
coming
away.
To snatch me away.
Yeah but no, you know what I mean,
like I completely know what you mean.
He's so comfortable in what he does.
He's natural, and it's really quite remarkable what he can do with such an insane plot. Yeah. Like the shit he was given to do, and like so like almost like a chameleon, so comfortably switch from being himself quote unquote like Axel Foley mm-hmm. into being like the bad guy's lover.
Yeah,
like pretending to go into the banquet hall to like fuck him up basically, yeah. essentially, and like making up stories along the way, like. Within this film, he does a lot of like chameleoning. So he like switches back and forth into personas so he can get what he wants.
Yeah, like when he goes to the hotel mm-hmm. and like lies about being a Rolling Stones
it's
reporter.
So fucking funny. And obviously he points out that like it's because yeah. he's black.
And he's like, you won't give me a room because I'm black. And then of course they give him a room.
Of course they do. So he is so smart, and he uses these disadvantages mm-hmm. to his advantage.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, being from Detroit where like he has to do everything himself and nothing's by the book, and then walking into the police station, or actually being like thrust into the mm-hmm. police
being
station
thrown into it
after being arrested by getting thrown out the fucking window by all like the mobsters who work for this like art dealer guy yeah. who's also secretly dealing drugs. I just think that he is so like the perfect actor, like the perfect person to be in this role in this moment, mm-hmm. creating that juxtaposition. Like, I love that. I love the like difference between walking into like the Beverly Hills police station and then like looking at the streets of Detroit and the precinct, like worlds apart. And I think he's the perfect blend of like, he's so incredibly cunning and smart.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses that to his advantage. And obviously, like, him being, like, a black man, like, that's obviously at that time and even now is, like, a disadvantage.
Sure.
So he uses that. And he uses his, like, cunning and his smarts.
Yeah.
And he fucking, like, blows the roof off of that place.
Yeah. He gets the job done. But there's, like, a lot. Oh, my God. There's so many funny moments along the way of this movie. Like, when he takes the two cops to the strip club.
So iconic. So good.
And, like, at first you're like, oh, they're just, like, going for a drink. Yeah, they're going to talk about, like, this crime, mm-hmm. whatever. And then he sits there and he starts, like, dancing in his chair. And he's like, yeah, we're in the strip club. Makes your dick get hard.
I know. He's, like, looking, I wrote this down. He's like looking across at like the fucking cops and he's like, I'm not on duty, so like my dick can get hard.
But like it's okay if your dick get hard.
It's okay, you know, like, you know, your supervisor's dick just got hard. It's fine. Like everything's okay. All the while, like again, like I cannot think of a better actor to create that, like the, you know, the sense of duality. And like he's like sitting there fucking just like working it with his top, like talking about like dicks and getting hard.
Monica's dancing, just so you guys know.
While at the same time literally like spotting two men who are about to fucking shoot up the place.
Yeah.
And he's just casually like, dick's getting hard, baby. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, that stripper likes you.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, he's so good. His charisma in this movie of like just himself and the character, like when they get reprimanded later by like the police chief and then they have the speech about the super cops and where he's like, these men, they're super cops.
They should wear capes. but the fucking two cops are like, that's not what happened, sir.
No.
And he looks at them and goes, you know, that was working. That story worked. That like pile of lies I told, that was fucking working. Y'all fucked up.
Yeah, because I don't think any of them expected him to be as good as he was.
No,
not at all.
They were shocked.
But then when they finally get on his side and like join forces with him, that's when the magic happens and they get to that, you know, like big final shootout at the mansion. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And like Judge Reinhold and what's his name?
What's
John
his
Ashton.
Face?
Yeah, John Ashton. They're like hiding behind that wall. And Judge Reinhold is like, this reminds me of Butch Cassidy. And this is...
It's so good.
And John Ashton is just like, what the fuck are you
Shut
talking about?
Shut the fuck up. We're about to die.
Yeah.
This movie is incredible. I also love the way that Eddie Murphy plays up mm-hmm. like the antics of it all mm-hmm. While still being like, a detective, like a cop. Like he still has like, you know, his ears are always up, his like antennas are always up, he's always like looking around, he's always making sure that like everything's okay mm-hmm. while at the same time like sending room service platters down to like the cops to like let them know that he's up
in
to
front
his
of the
antics.
Hotel yeah
he's like and he's like stuffs bananas into the tailpipe. What I really like about this film is like all the people of color in this film help him out and like mm-hmm. don't say anything.
Yeah,
like the like the Hispanic room service waiter who like brings him down, he's like shoving the fucking bananas up the tailpipe and Eddie Murphy looks over at the Hispanic room service waiter and he's like, don't say anything,
and this he like winks at him
and the guy like winks back like, oh, you're up to no good.
It's so funny.
And the guy who gave him the bananas is like, here are the bananas. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah, it's like, even though Eddie Murphy is a cop, he is, because he's black, he's mm-hmm. still an underdog in a way. So mm-hmm. he's able to identify with the more like literal underdogs mm-hmm. of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
pretty
good.
And they all
good.
Help each other out. Yeah. This most iconic line in the film, he's like, take these bananas. This is so good. Shh, take these bananas. I love it. I love that he does bullshit like stick bananas up a tailpipe, but then also like knows how to fucking identify shooters in a strip club.
Well, yeah, and then they bring it up later with the cops Judge Reinhold and John Ashton, who had the bananas up the tailpipe first. And the police chief is like, that's the oldest trick in the book. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You didn't notice that? Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, this other cop, this Detroit cop who pulls a lot of shit is the one who did it. And he like, you know, pulled the wool over your eyes. So you guys actually suck.
Yeah. And not only that, but like when they brought up the whole concept of like the coffee grounds mm-hmm. and Eddie Murphy kept talking about it, or like Axel Foley kept talking about it. And the other cops like never were like, just what the fuck?
They're like, it's coffee.
What, whatever. And they get to the station and like the police, like sergeant chief, whatever he is, I don't know my fucking ranks, but he basically like looks at them and he goes, yeah, you guys didn't know like coffee grounds are, you know, to mask the scent of like drugs.
Yeah.
Drogas, cocaine, like that's what it's for. And they were like, So I love this movie because, you know, watching it as a young tot, I think that it really showed me that, like, the underdog truly sometimes can be so much smarter, so much better than these Beverly Hills bozos, if you will.
Agreed.
Such
we love this movie. Go watch it.
Go watch it. Enjoy it with some popcorn, maybe a banana.
Enjoy a really, really wonderful little cameo appearance from Bronson Pinchot, who's he's the gallery worker. And you know, well, right now he's in the new Sabrina, Teenage Witch, whatever the hell show.
The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Exactly. He's in that. He plays the principal, which is like whatever. Mm-hmm. But he is a really wonderful like bit character actor. And he was also in The First Wives Club. And he has like one of the best 2 minutes of the entire movie.
Yeah.
I guess we'll move on now.
Yeah.
Go watch Beverly Hills Cop, you guys.
Go watch Beverly. I was just looking to see if I had anything else to say about it, and I did not.
Nope.
I think it's a really well-made film.
Yeah.
For being like what it was supposed like billed as.
Yeah.
It's billed as this like not raunchy but like funny comedy like
it's a wacky it's cop wacky. With his wacky antics.
But no. He has antics but they're not that wacky
and it's really smart. It's a really smart really movie. Smart.
I love it. Yeah. 10 out of 10. 3 thumbs up.
So now we're going to move into the 90s, a little 90s Eddie Murphy.
Oh my.
In the film that is Bowfinger, 1999 movie. I don't know Monica's thoughts about this movie yet, so this is going to be a purely, you know, candid conversation.
I'm shaking my head as she's like, she's like begging me with her eyes to like enjoy this film. There always has to be one.
There has to be one that Monica hates. All right. So this movie was written by Steve Martin, directed by Frank Oz. You know him as the voice of Yoda, Miss Piggy, Fozzie Bear, etc.
We love
Frank. Okay, so I'll give you a synopsis of the movie. When washed-up filmmaker Bobby Bowfinger's, Steve Martin, when his movie idea is rejected by action star Kit Ramsey, Eddie Murphy, Bowfinger decides to make the movie around Kit without him knowing he's in it. However, the filmmaking starts to make Kit believe he's the target of an alien invasion, so Bowfinger hires an untalented lookalike, also Eddie Murphy, to star in the film. Hilarity ensues.
Okay, I want to start by saying this film is fucking funny. This is a funny film.
It's a funny fucking movie.
It is a Frank Oz feel good. I think it's a highly optimistic film.
Mm-hmm.
For being what it is, and I
for being absolutely batshit.
It's fucking batshit. It's good.
But I guess that part is credited to Steve Martin in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So just like, it's a feel good film. It's highly optimistic. I think it's fucking funny. So that's like, just right off the bat, those are my initial thoughts about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to hear what you truly believe.
So Jessica, I have seen this movie more than once. I haven't rewatched it in a few years. And I mean, I love this movie, minus the few moments of far too casual 1990s racism that appear in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get past those moments and write them off, I guess, to just like what was acceptable at the time and what people found really funny. Moving past that, I think this movie is fucking hilarious. And I think is a really good demonstration of Eddie Murphy's ability to play multiple characters, because like that's one of his things that he does.
Yeah.
And I guess you would argue that he does that best in The Nutty Professor, but that movie is literally far too offensive to discuss.
Right. Absolutely. Which we think that full disclaimer, I guess, we think that film is a classic and it's funny.
Yeah.
But bringing it into like today, like today's
horrible
world,
movie,
it's just not.
He's very good in it.
He's so good in it.
But like the movie itself is really horrendous.
It's very fat shamey and not nice.
Very, very, very not nice.
But anyway, no hate, no shade to Nutty Professor. Just, you know, it was a different time.
Yeah.
It was a different time. You know, I will actually argue, you know, I think that this film actually showcases Eddie Murphy's ability to play different characters in the same film better than the Nutty Professor. And the reason being is he doesn't, to my knowledge, at least from what I saw, he didn't use any prosthetics.
That's true.
And there was very little costuming variance. All he did was change his voice, like the tonality
and, like,
of his
the
voice.
Way his face.
And his body language.
Yeah.
And I, what I will say about this film is that fucking mesmerized me. I was like, that is the work of an incredible, beautiful, trained actor. Like, that's crazy to me that I fully knew that. I went into it fully knowing Eddie Murphy plays two different characters, but it's the same guy. And there was no prosthetics. And I was like blown the fuck away, because I truly believe that these were two completely different characters, that these two characters were brothers and played by different people, but they were not.
Yeah.
he's a magical unicorn that way.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I think Nutty Professor is a more like clear example of that talent, just because, I mean, it's like so apparent.
Right.
But in this, in Bowfinger, the two characters are much more like developed characters, if that makes any sense.
That makes
like they're
sense,
more human in a lot of ways. I mean, they're still kind of insane, but you know, they have more human aspects to them than in the Nutty Professor,
which
where they're just kind
so
of like caricatures. But I think so. I think in this movie, it has one of the most brilliant like moments when you first meet Eddie Murphy.
Right.
When he's like marching through his mansion, getting pissed. And then he goes on a rant about the Kennedys and then pulls out a shotgun and shoots the symbols on the drum. And you're just like, OK, this movie is fucking ready.
But yeah, his like being able to distinguish those two characters, because like those two personalities are stupidly different.
Yeah.
Like Kit, who we gets introduced in the film, the moment that Jessica's referring to, being like Eddie Murphy as Kit, who is like this,
he's like a big action superstar,
like a Tom Cruise kind of guy.
Yeah. I think when I was reading about
multiple reasons,
I think when I was reading about the movie and he was talking about when the movie was pitched to him, and he was told like, it's pretty much like you're going to be like a black Tom Cruise or like a black action star. And he was like, okay, I'm on board.
That's cool. That's chill. I'll be a black Tom Cruise.
But then the other character that he plays, whose name is, I think, Jif. I think that's his name. I think his name is Jif. I didn't write it down, because I think it's short for like Jifferson or something. Something really insane like that.
Really stupid.
Who you find out later, spoiler alert, is actually Kit Ramsey's brother. But they're just like estranged and they don't really talk. And he's like, he's a totally different character. He's like kind of dumb. I think
Jifferson.
He's so pure. I love the moment in the movie. They've like just finished up filming like a big scene or something, and they're all sitting at that diner eating together, and he starts talking about how he doesn't like acting because like he doesn't know if he's really getting the job done, and how he feels better. He feels better about like getting coffee because he's like, because you know, I'm the one who gets the coffee, and I make sure I put the napkins in the bag, and I make sure I get the cream and the sugar, and I bring it to someone, and I know that I got the coffee. I did that.
You know, I really relate to that.
In what way?
In every way. I want to be the guy who gets the coffee and put the napkins in the bag and gets those tiny little straws that keeps your lipstick off the coffee cup. Like that, I want that to be me.
I want to know that I got the job done.
I want a pat on the head.
Monica, did you notice that there's a crossover in this movie with your favorite Eddie Murphy movie?
Yes. Tell them, Jessica, so I can introduce the movie.
So there's this really, really funny subplot in the movie about this group of people called Mindheads.
Sorry, I'm like,
which I think is supposed to be kind of like Scientology.
Yeah, that is. I read. Okay. I will just say, checking. I did read up on that, and it is supposed to be 100% just Scientology.
Okay, I don't want the Scientologists to come after me. So it's this group. It's this group that like Kit Ramsey is a part of, and he has to, and because he's like a big celebrity follower, he has to go in and meet with like the head of the mind heads who like talks him through like his anxieties and things like that. And he has that really funny scene where he's like, and what must we not do? And he goes, don't show it to the Laker girls. And he goes, that's right, we don't show our wiener to the Laker girls. And he goes, but I gotta show it to the Laker girls.
Want to know what they think of it.
But I gotta show it to the Laker girls. It's so funny. But anyway, the actor who plays the leader of the Mindheads, I don't know his name, but he is in Haunted Mansion.
He's in the Haunted Mansion.
Monica's favorite Eddie Murphy film.
It's my... The reason we're not talking about Haunted Mansion today is I got outvoted. So,
and by outvoted... Because I'm the only other person voting. Is I just Jessica said, Monica, absolutely
didn't
not.
Didn't let me do it.
Terrence Stamp. Yeah. That's his name.
Yeah. He plays the butler, like, bad guy character.
Ramsay?
Yes. Ramsay. He plays Ramsay in the Haunted Mansion. It's so fucking good. For those of you who have never seen the... I'm just kidding. I was going to, like, go into the Haunted
Monica's
Mansion.
Monica's going to do, like a... Mini synopsis for you.
If you guys have not seen The Haunted Mansion, though, it is my favorite Eddie Murphy film. It is not widely regarded.
It's very bad. It's quite terrible.
I think it's more the nostalgia.
That's fair. I mean, it does have good people in it, like Eddie Murphy's in it. Mm-hmm.
What's her face is in it.
All these great people that we definitely know the names of. He has the guy from The Princess Bride in it. What is his name?
My name is Inigo Montoya.
Not that Wallace one. That's
Shawn. Yuki.
Wallace Shawn.
Yes, Wallace Shawn, Nathaniel Parker. Wait, who's he?
Anyway, the people in Haunted Mansion are Wallace Shawn, Eddie Murphy. Are those the only notable names? Because that's all I remember. Oh, it has that girl, Jennifer Tilly, who's in Liar Liar in it.
Yeah.
The guy who plays the Oompa Loompa in the Tim Burton Charlie and the Tiger is in it.
Yes, he's in it.
His name is Deep Roy.
Yeah, he not only plays one Oompa Loompa, but he plays all of them. He carries a large load. Oh,
what
yeah.
What another actor who's brilliant at playing multiple roles. Mm-hmm. And by multiple, I mean literally thousands
literally
in that movie.
Thousands. Yeah.
Anyway, back on track to what we were talking about.
Ooh.
How do you feel about Bowfinger, Monica? What are your genuine thoughts on this whole movie?
I mean, I feel like I said what I needed to say. but in reality, I think that it's a really good, like I said, it's a very optimistic film. It's a good romp. It very much showcases what Eddie Murphy can do. And I think that, to me, like, it's not my favorite, like, Steven Martin film. Stephen Martin.
Where are we today?
Steve Madden. Steve Madden.
Okay. Monica's on drugs.
It's not my favorite Steve Martin film.
Sure.
By a landslide.
That's fine.
And it is
I don't
think
it's his movie, personally.
It's not. It's also not my favorite Eddie Murphy film by a landslide. I think
Well, The Haunted Mansion. Nothing can top The Haunted Mansion in your eyes.
If people can just let Guillermo let just let Ryan and Guillermo make their fucking movie. Why won't you let them?
Okay, well, anyway.
But back to my thoughts. I think that...
Not your favorite.
Not my favorite. I think that it's beautifully directed by Frank Oz.
I think it's a fucking hysterical movie.
It's
personally,
hysterical. Yeah.
The idea of filming a movie around someone who doesn't know they're in a movie and then, like, staging an alien invasion. But, like, he thinks that it's real because all of the... because he does happen to, like... interact with the people making the movie a few times because they are not aware that he doesn't know. Only Steve Martin knows. So, like, Eddie Murphy now thinks that, like, he's part of an alien invasion because of these few interactions, and it's so fucking funny. The concept,
it's so good.
It's absolutely so good. Insane. Yeah. And there's, like, some really good, like, Robert Downey Jr. has a nice little cameo in there. Mm-hmm. Heather Graham is really funny supporting character. I think this movie also says a lot about Hollywood in general.
Yeah, yeah. You can make a movie for $2,000.
Yeah, so if you're someone who, like, enjoys movies about making movies or movies that say funny shit about Hollywood and about the industry,
you'll
love this. Because I love this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. 10 out of 10.
Great.
Not my favorite, but I can
10 out of 10, but not your favorite.
10 out of 10, not my favorite.
I think you can always count on Monica to say 10 out of 10 about
but
the movies that we talk
I can
about.
Totally appreciate what it's doing. I think the plot is bananas.
Yeah.
Bonkers bad shit. And I love that.
Yeah.
It was a wild ride.
Yeah.
Popcorn flick. Love. But so also not really.
She'll never tell Monica's
I never show my god.
She's coy like that. She'll never tell you exactly what she's thinking.
Anyway, that was Bowfinger. Thank you guys.
Yeah, so that brings us to our final film. The
final film.
The comeback creme. In a lot of ways, some people say.
De la creme.
Yeah, the creme de la creme.
Of all of these films, I think. Even though Beverly Hills Cop is my favorite Eddie Murphy film.
I mean, that's iconic for like the beginning of his career, but I think of when we think of what Eddie Murphy is trying to do now with his career, mm-hmm. this is the movie
this
that,
is it.
You know, yeah. really, really solidifies things. And that movie is Dolomite Is My Name.
Dolomite Is My Name.
Dolomite.
Dolomite. Dolomite. Dolomite. It's so fucking good. Dolomite Is My Name came out last year in 2019. It was written by Scott Alexander and Larry Karaszewski.
You got it.
Directed by Craig Brewer, based on the making of the 1975 blaxploitation film Dolomite, written by Rudy Ray Moore and Jerry Jones. Yes, it was a real film. Directed by Derville Martin.
Yeah.
Dolomite tells the story of Rudy Ray Moore, played by Eddie Murphy brilliantly, an aspiring performer who develops an outrageous character named Dolomite, who becomes an underground sensation and star of his own low-budget, self-made film. Expected to fail, Dolomite surprises and becomes a beloved character and film, particularly within the black community, and serves as a source of hilarity and hope for viewers.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
Did you know anything about this movie before you saw it?
I knew that there was a blaxploitation film called Dolomite. Mm-hmm. I have seen scenes of it, but I've never seen like the movie. But
have you ever seen like a blaxploitation movie in general?
No.
Okay.
But this was really interesting to learn about during the like process of watching this film. Like I never really knew what like blaxploitation films pertain, like what came under that umbrella.
Yeah.
And watching this film really solidified for me like what the characteristics come with that genre.
Yeah. Because I think a lot of people have seen imagery from blaxploitation movies. Mm-hmm. Like we've all seen like the 70s pimp or clips of like black pimp guys doing kung fu.
Yep.
And you're just like, what the fuck is this?
What is that?
And it's from this genre of films mm-hmm. called blaxploitation films that happened in the 70s that were like really important culturally. I mean, they're not good movies.
But they're not supposed to be good
movies. No, they're not like good, like quote unquote films, but they were very like important.
Entertaining.
And they were like what the people wanted. If you have issues with movies where there's like a lot of like sexual abuse and things like that, maybe don't watch them. But I think they're really important for like understanding mm-hmm. film and like where this movie came from, at least.
I think that if you're going to watch any blaxploitation film, coming from someone who's only ever seen Dolomite Is My Name, which again is just like almost like a, I guess, a biopic?
In a way.
Yeah, almost. Like making a...
It's a biographical, yeah.
It sort of, you know, wherever it falls under. Under in the Netflix category.
Yeah.
Because it is a Netflix film. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, as someone who's seen imagery, who I'm sure, like, you, the listener, who I'm sure, like, has seen imagery, who knows of, like, the pimps doing kung fu, like, that's something that I've always seen and always known. But I think that I've now have a really newfound appreciation for that genre and what it did for its community.
Mm-hmm.
I think that beyond, like, the fact, no, they're not good films, per se.
No, and they weren't particularly influential in the grand scheme of, like,
mm-mm.
film.
Not at all. But what they did in the moment was serve their community mm-hmm. in a very specific way.
Yeah, and people loved them.
Yeah. They gave its community entertainment
mm-hmm.
and fun and a distraction for like 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's that really, and I think this is the scene that like sets up what Dolomite is about in mm-hmm. the movie. It's where they're like Dolomite is sitting, or I mean, he's not Dolomite yet. He's just Rudy.
I know. He's just, at that point in time, he's just Rudy.
He's just Rudy. So he's sitting with his friends and they're like eating and they're talking about like what they should go do. And they're like, oh, let's go see a movie. And he says mm-hmm. that he really wants to go see The Front Page because he heard like how funny it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've never seen the front page, it's just like a bunch of white people in a newsroom.
Yeah, it's like not that funny, but no. Like white people lose their shit over it.
Yeah, and so they go and they see the movie and they're sitting there and they're all looking at each other like, what the fuck is this?
Like, they're like, this shit is not funny.
He goes, he's like, there's no titties, there's no kung fu.
I know.
And so then he decides to create this movie. Mm-hmm. To serve us to what their own community finds funny.
Which, you know, I just want to point out, it is not that, you know, black people's humor is like less than
no.
any other group's humor.
No.
I just think that there is a specific need for a specific kind of humor that the black community appreciates and like wants to see at that time, which the, you know, blaxploitation films filled that need. And I like a good film with car explosions and titties.
Sure.
And that's,
so
it's
do
hilarious.
I. But that's not what the white public wanted at the time. And I think that's more of what I'm referring to. Mm-hmm. Is like the white folk weren't comfortable with comedies like that.
No. But I think that what Rudy was doing at the time, well, his gears were turning and trying to create this character that ended up being Dolomite. I think the origins of that was so interesting because he stole the idea and the jokes from a local
homeless man. Yeah, so there's this homeless man named Rico who, if you've ever seen the show This Is Us, he's in that show.
Yeah, he's
he plays Randall's like birth father.
So random.
He's also in Dolomite. And mm-hmm. he's like this homeless man who walks into the record store that Rudy works at. He works there with Titus Burgess, who put him in more movies.
Put him in
God
everything.
Damn it. He's so funny. So he walks in and he comes in and like starts saying these rhymes about this character named Dolomite.
Yeah, he starts fucking spitting straight fire. Like at the humble folk that are just chilling at the record store. And he, you know, and one fun fact that I think the movie at the end, what's it called? An epilogue?
Yeah.
It like says on screen, Dolomite, quote unquote, is credited as being like the godfather of rap.
Yeah.
Because the way that he told his jokes in this like fun stylistic rhyming way, or rather, Rico originated.
Yeah.
He really took it and ran with it. And I think that goes to show you like what you can do with an idea. Like if someone has an idea, but they don't execute it, they don't do anything with it. Like, how is that any good? Like, how is an idea just good in your head and not out in the world?
Yeah. Because Rudy, he was trying to be, I mean, at first you're like, oh, is he trying to be a musician? Because he's giving these records that he's made to Snoop Dogg, who is like a DJ in the record store.
An incredible cameo, by the way.
Snoop Dogg has said that he would be nothing without Rudy Ray Moore.
Yeah, exactly.
Without the work of him.
Which is really great that he, you know, paid a little bit of a respect to him by being in this film.
Yeah. But so like he won't play the records because he's like, these are horrible. And so Rudy Ray Moore is just like, okay, well. So he also does like stand-up comedy, but like he fucking sucks. And like
so
nobody
bad.
Thinks he's good.
Until he steals
Rico's stuff. And then he like puts on a pimp suit and goes to the comedy club and starts saying these insane
just
rhymes.
Ridiculous.
Like, I wish I knew one so I could say it, but I would not do it justice.
I feel like even if we did know them, just saying them would be so stupidly raunchy that this podcast would be taken off the internet. I think specifically like with that opening sequence when Rudy is talking to Snoop Dogg's character, whose name totally eludes me, but it's Snoop Dogg with his fucking dreads and his like Snoopy way.
Yeah.
He is obviously like playing the DJ at the record store, and Rudy's trying to get like his shitty like music to get played on the radio.
Yeah.
And the Snoop Dogg is like, I'm not fucking doing it. And Rudy, one thing that solidified for me in that moment was Rudy will say anything to like get people to like hop on his shit.
Yeah.
Like he was like, Marvin Gaye ain't shit. He's clearly shit. Like he's clearly good. Like what?
Like, no, it's true. He just wanted people to be on his side, but is simultaneously a very genuine person.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that he's just looking for somewhere to break out, and he knows that he needs to be famous. Like, that's what he wants to be.
Yeah, he knows he needs to be famous, and he knows that this film needs to get made. And like, I love that moment where he's in the office of the people who were producing his records, and he's like pitching the movie to mm-hmm. them, and they're like, what the fuck is wrong with
no.
you? And they say, they're like, you're not supposed to make a movie for the 5 square blocks of people you know. Mm-hmm. And he and Rudy Ray Moore says, well, that's all right by me, because every city in America's got those 5 blocks.
Yeah, every city in America has those same 5 blocks. Like, that yeah. shit is on lock. That is like,
that's like the essence of what the movie is about.
Yeah, it shows the tenacity that he has in order to create this need, like to serve this community and like fill this need for these kinds of films. And like, you know, he's right, everyone does love Dolemite, you yeah. know. Throughout the film, you just see the multitudes of people. Like, he goes from selling records out of his car mm-hmm. That he made like at his home, these like live comedy records mm-hmm. To like having them sold like at the record store, like yeah. with every other album, recreating those album covers, which I just find to
the
be
nude album covers, they're so funny.
The one where the woman is like completely nude but like kind of covered, and like
she's just covering her like
root
boobs with a blanket. and Eddie Murphy is also completely nude, and you see his butt.
Yeah, I love the confidence that he has mm-hmm. because obviously, like, they make a point in the film to point out that he's like very portly.
Yeah,
and he's like, you know what? Ain't nothing wrong with that. Like, I look good, I feel good, I know where my strengths are, and I'm going to play to my strengths.
Yeah,
and I like that.
Yeah,
obviously, not that being portly is a problem, but
no, there was like one weird scene though where I was like, this is vaguely fat shamey, and I'm not a huge fan of it. So it's in the movie. So there's going to be a sex scene between Dolemite and like some random white woman, and it's the night before, and the woman in the movie, I forget her name,
Lady Reed.
Yes. So she's talking to Dolemite, and she's like, you know, because he's saying that he's nervous about it because, you know, like, he doesn't have a great body.
Yeah, he's a bit portly.
And she's like, well, like, there's nothing you can do, just make it funny. And he's like, okay, I'll make it funny. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, couldn't you just not had this scene and made it funny, and yeah. like not had the discussion of, oh, I'm too fat and I'm ashamed of that, so I'm just gonna be funny instead of sexy. Like, they made a point to include a scene where they're like, don't try to be sexy because you're fat. Like, just be funny instead.
That's an interesting perspective, because the way that I saw that was he's a stupidly confident man.
Yeah.
He's very in tune with his body, but like, he did not feel comfortable acting in that manner specifically.
Sure.
So the way that I saw it was like, well, if you don't feel comfortable doing that, then like, make it funny. Cause like, what the fuck else are you going to do? Like, there's going to be a naked woman on that set.
Sure.
And you're gonna have
I think my issue with it is that they had a scene stating that at
yeah,
all.
I know.
They could have just gone right into them shooting the scene and him choosing to make it funny.
Yeah.
And not having it be this conflict within himself where he goes like, well, I can't be sexy cause I'm fat.
Yeah.
And I'm like, exactly. Well, that was dumb. He should have just not said that.
Because Lady Reed is very sexy in the film.
Yeah.
And she's just sexy all around in yeah. like the bigger film. In Don't Mind His Money. Yeah. Within like the, you know, because this is a movie that's
in the film and the film in the film.
Within the film.
Yeah.
And she's fantastic in this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's
and,
really, really good.
You know, the scene where she's singing with Rudy and
yes.
performing as Dolemite, and they're like,
and they have their like duo
together. It's fucking funny. Like, they're so good.
They're so funny.
And she, you know, she has so much sass, and mm-hmm. but in a way that's really biting and smart.
Yeah.
I love all her lines. Her lines are fantastic. All yeah. the dialogue she was given is,
I think her character is the one that makes it clear that like Dolemite made, or like Rudy Ray Moore, his film made like misfits feel like they had a place.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a really important part of the movie. And I think her character was like the vehicle through which that theme came through the most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love at the end of the movie when she's like, I'm so grateful to you. Cause like, I've never seen, you know, someone who looks like me on
there,
screen.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's right. And I think that was really liberating for her. And I think from the very beginning, she was never meant to feel small or unworthy or ugly or anything, because like from the very beginning, like Rudy saw her like point blank, and that was what propelled her to becoming more confident. And
he saw her at a bar.
Yeah, he just saw her, period. And I think that, you know, her biggest issue like walking around in the world is like she's not seen, or she's not seen in the way she wants to be seen. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, I'm a fan.
Yeah, there are a lot of deep layers to this movie. I think when people first saw the trailer, they were like, oh, it's just Eddie Murphy being crazy, and like he hasn't done a movie in a few years, so like whatever. But there's like a lot of depth to the film and a lot of depth to the character. Like,
yeah,
I think it's easy to watch this movie once and just be like, oh, he's just like some funny guy who's making some like crazy movie. But there's that really incredible scene where he's in the Dunbar Hotel, and it's like the night before they start filming. Mm-hmm. And he's looking at that picture of his, I'm assuming his dad. His father. Yeah. They never say it explicitly, but I'm assuming it's his dad.
It's his dad with like a bunch of other farmers.
Yeah. And he's like cursing at the photo because I'm assuming, you know, absent father, whatever. And then from that, he goes right into saying his lines as Dolomite and repeating them over and over, repeating the whole like, Dolomite is my name.
And fucking up motherfuckers is my game.
And he says it over and over and over again into the mirror. And you see like the anger and you see the sadness, but then you also see it transition into like power and his talent. And that like one moment, he's repeating the same line over and over again. He's not really deviating that much. But I was like, his acting is incredible.
Yeah. Absolutely.
He was fucking robbed of a nomination for this movie.
Oh my God. So robbed. I mean, not again, we always say it, not that it matters, but it kind of does. But yeah, I was literally just about to talk about that moment. Like that's why I'm so happy that that moment like translated so well to so many different people, because, you know, he found himself in this hotel that like has no fucking running water, has no electricity, like is with a bunch of ragtag, like people who have never made a film before. And then a bunch of white
kids. Except for Wesley Snipes, who plays Derville Martin, who, excuse me, was directed by Roman Polanski himself.
He's in Rosemary's Baby. Fucking good in this film. His fucking cocaine pinky finger like, is everything.
This movie is Eddie Murphy's movie, but it's also Wesley Snipes' movie.
Oh my fucking God.
I'm not super familiar with his work. I've seen him in a few things, but I was like, he's incredible.
So fucking good.
So good in this movie.
He plays this like really like,
he's like, I'm an actor, man.
I'm an actor, man. And like, this is my process. And like, you didn't work with Roman Polanski. I did. Like, it was me. And like, you know, what's so funny is like, Rudy asks him to star in his film. Mm-hmm. And he's like, fuck no. Like, get the fuck away. I'm legit. I have an agent. Talk to him. And he's like, will you direct? And his face just goes like, sure. Like, of course. Like, me direct, making my directorial debut.
But then the whole time he's just like sitting on the side directing scenes, drinking. And remember when they have the kung fu scene where Dolomite has to throw that guy
so
in the trunk
bad.
And he looks at like the cinematographer and he's like, is there any way we can shoot this where it looks like he's actually fighting?
And he's just like, there is no such angle. There is no such angle, sir. It's so good.
Oh my God.
Yeah, all the white kids working on this movie are all like UCLA.
They're supposed to be UCLA film kids. It's so funny.
And one of the things about this film that I love is it does not take itself too seriously. So like when the film kids steal the electricity from like the next hotel over, and the entire hotel like lights up and it's beautiful, they have fucking La Vie en Rose.
I was just about to talk
and
about
it's like,
that.
And it's like these like the neon lights.
You see like a montage of all the lights in the hotel start coming on and everyone starts to be illuminated. And it's like a really funny self-aware moment, but it's also like kind of sweet.
Yeah.
Because that's where like that's how it starts. Yeah. That's how the movie gets to be made, you know?
It's too good. It's like just one of, I'm like, this movie knows what it is and it still did that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. This movie really just had me at the end going like, fuck the critics, man.
I mean, people liked it though.
No, that's the thing. It's like, who do you care about liking your film more? you know, a fucking critic or like the 10 homies down the block.
Well, and that's the thing. I don't think Eddie Murphy has ever cared. Otherwise, he wouldn't have done fucking Daddy Daycare, you know?
I love Daddy Daycare.
I also love Daddy Daycare, but not the point. You know, like he had a really long string of films in the early 2000s that like were garbage. And then he came back with, people considered Dreamgirls to be like his comeback because he got an Oscar nomination. And just so the listeners know, we thought about doing Dreamgirls, but he's truly in like 10 minutes total
and
of the movie.
Is the best part of that film.
He's the only part of that movie you should care about other than like Jennifer Hudson singing her song.
And also Anika Noni Rose.
Oh yeah. Anika Noni Rose is also really good in it. I'm not saying Beyonce's not good, but she's just like nothing special like in
Beyonce.
This movie.
She's like, you know, if you want to watch a movie where Beyonce essentially like plays Beyonce.
Yeah, go ahead and watch this movie. But Eddie Murphy is the most impressive part of that entire film. But and there just like wasn't there wasn't enough to talk about other than the fact that he's the best part of the movie.
And that he can sing.
And he has an incredible voice. Absolutely incredible.
But yeah, this movie was fucking phenomenal. It was my first time watching it. It was Jessica's, what, like second time watching it. It's amazing. It's fantastic. And it's available on Netflix if you want to go watch it full free, aka the like $14.99 you pay month.
Yeah. And at the end of the movie, they do like side by sides of shots of like the original Dolomite movie. So that's kind of fun to see.
It's fucking funny, especially the scene where he's like doing the terrible kung fu and he's wearing that like checkered hat, the like black and white checkered hat. I'm like, it really did look that terrible.
Barely touching anybody. It's so fun. Or the scene where he's having sex with the girl and the ceiling falls down.
It just looks, it's too funny.
It's so good.
But yeah. That was Dolomite.
And that is Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
We love Eddie Murphy. It was hard choosing movies.
It really was.
Because while he has been in some quote unquote bad movies, I really like a lot of them.
I agree.
Like Back to Daddy Daycare. That's a fucking fun movie, you guys.
That's a good film.
Like I had to look it up because I was like, I wonder if the critics did actually dislike this movie. And they did.
No, they did.
People hated Daddy Daycare.
They did.
But like Jeff Garlin is in Daddy Daycare. Mm-hmm. Steve Zahn is in Daddy Daycare.
All the daddies.
It's fucking hilarious.
It's like, good.
You know, so I think there's value in a lot of the quote unquote trash that he's done.
I agree.
Yeah.
Like quote unquote trash. The Haunted Mansion.
Also, not trash. People loved it, but Shrek, really impressive voice work with Shrek.
I know. I just want to have a moment of silence for Shrek as the internet killed it.
Yeah, I did propose doing Shrek to Monica, but Monica was like, I literally can't. The internet has fucked
the
Shrek
internet
up.
Really fucked Shrek up for me.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. Really go familiarize yourself with some Eddie Murphy material.
Yeah,
especially older material. It really like doesn't align with, I think, a lot of what we know about Eddie Murphy now.
But it's good.
But it's good. It's fun to see like what he started as.
And watch his comedy specials. Listen to his music. Like he's a multifaceted creative, and I appreciate that about him.
So yeah.
Do it. Do the do.
Do it. All right, Monica. That brings us to our segment.
What have you dabbled in, Jessica?
I've literally been doing nothing. It's like absolutely shameful. I mean, I'm working now, so that is like what I've been doing, and that is very time consuming and stressful.
Is it going well?
It is going well, but you know, like having full control over an Instagram account with like over 60,000 followers on my personal device.
That's really nerve-wracking,
it's
man.
Very nerve-wracking. Especially because I only work 3 days a week. And so on my days off, I still get the notifications. And I'm just like, I feel like I have to respond. I feel like I am responsible for this.
Yeah. I work for a nonprofit theater and it's very different vibes.
Yeah. I work for a high fashion company. So, you know.
Yeah. So we're like Bert and Ernie in a way. I won't say who's Bert and who's Ernie.
Like, it's fun. It is rewarding. It's nice to do something involved, like to work for a company that is actively involved in the community that I am a part of. So, you know.
Blessings.
Yeah.
That's all I really have. I mean,
what have you dabbled in?
I mean, I just got a fucking Peloton rolled into my office.
Yeah, you also pinched a nerve.
Yeah, that was bad. So, like, today is Sunday, everyone. I just want to let everyone know, like, what day we typically record, which is a Saturday, the day before Saturday, which is Friday. I did, I like, you know, throughout the day, this happened at Whole Foods, but like my entire like left side of my body went numb.
Christ.
It was interesting to say the least, but you know, I'm fine now.
It's Did you Sunday. Just like fall over? Because I imagine half your body going numb and then you just like tipping over.
So when half your body goes numb, you would think that I would tip over, but I didn't. So
you could still move, you just couldn't feel it?
I just couldn't feel it.
Oh, weird.
You know how you can still, when you go to the dentist and they numb your lips, you can still move them. You just cannot feel them at all.
You also have like a really skewed idea of like how much you're moving them too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that
exactly
what was happening with
That's
your body?
That's what was happening with my body. Because like my hand would just lie there like a dead fish. I think I sent you a picture.
Yeah, you did.
It looked like a wax figure. Like it was not, I could not feel it. And so therefore I could not lay it down on the bed the way it was supposed to be. And I think, you know, I think you're thinking of like paralyzed.
I mean, I am, but still.
Yes, I can move my limbs. No, it's just pins and needles, but I should be fine. You know, everyone shoots some prayers up to the good Heeb up there for me.
Yeah, yeah. Monica's on some meds, so she's going to be okay.
Lord. But yeah. All right. Cool. You know what? Let's get into the question. Someone actually asked us a question today, which is really nice.
It's a very chill question.
What would Jon Favreau do is the name of our segment. We will give you questionable advice on what we think Jon Favreau would do for you. Today's question, what is your favorite thing to sip on during feature presentations?
That's so specific.
During feature presentations.
Only during movies?
Yeah. I like to sip on kombucha. I really enjoy like Better Booch. I'm not like a big like alcohol drinker when I'm watching films. I'm not really sure why.
Me neither.
But I like a good Better Booch. The citrus sunrise flavor in specifically, yeah.
I like LaCroix a lot. If I'm by myself, we're drinking LaCroix now.
Sponsor us.
But I've been drinking the limoncello LaCroix lately. So that's what I guess what I'm drinking when I'm watching movies at home. But if I'm watching movies, like, okay, if I go to a movie theater.
Oh, yeah. Tell me.
That is my, I get a free pass to get a cherry Coke when I go to the movie
theater. Remember that? You remember going to like a movie theater?
I don't actually.
What an experience.
Zero memories.
My memory was wiped after the war.
I don't really drink soda, but if I go to the movies, I want something like sweet and bubbly. So I always get a cherry Coke and that's my go-to. Yeah.
When I go to the movies, I don't drink like a sugary drink because I'll have a fuckload of sour candy. So what I do is I bring my hydro flask into the movie theater, fill it to the brim with like ice and a fuck ton of water, and just take like my 7 bags of like Sour Patch Kids and like Airheads.
That's
and
so good.
Bullshit Sour Punch straws, whatever, and like, you know, waddle
See,
into
a,
the theater.
I'm a cherry Coke and buttered popcorn kind of gal for the movies.
Yeah, I'm not like a, you know what's so funny? I hate myself so much. I don't like buttered popcorn if it doesn't have like some sort of like acid to it. Like
we've talked about this before. Yeah.
I'm just like I'm an acid Annie. Like that's just who I am.
What a name.
I really enjoy like a good, like, you know, pinch of lemon, you know, lime juice in my popcorn, maybe some lemon pepper, you know, some tahini. I don't fucking know, man.
I just like buttered popcorn. That's just me. I think it's funny, like, caring about what everyone's movie routines are, because I find that everyone has, like, the thing that they like the most at the movies.
Yeah, like, my husband, he really, like, he goes to the movies, and, like, this motherfucker wants an icy, like, rain or shine.
That's so funny. That's how my mom is when she goes to the movies. Never any other time, but when
Never.
She goes to the
like,
movie,
literally.
She needs an icy.
Like, well, I'll be like, oh, do you, like, you know, it's a hot day. Yeah. It's a hot-ass day, and I'm like, oh, let's go get, like, a Slurpee at 7-Eleven or, like, a smoothie. He's like, no, I only get, like, icy stuff, like, when I go to the movie theater. Mm-hmm. Like, what the fuck is that?
What flavor does he get?
Only Coke.
Okay.
Never anything else.
My mom's a cherry gal.
Oh, that's nice.
She likes cherry. Yeah.
I don't like ices very much, but he does.
I think they're fine. I like the Coke ones better, but the rest are too sweet.
Frozen Coke. That's like all it is.
Yeah, I know, but that's kind of fun. When you were a kid, didn't you like used to do the thing where you would just like put different beverages in cups and freeze it and just to like see what it would taste like frozen?
I was poor.
Okay, but like...
I was really poor. We would go to the Pacific theaters. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, for those of you who give a shit. And I grew up in Canoga Park, which is one of the like poorest areas of there. Because if you guys didn't know, I was poor. I'm not poor now. I'm slightly poor. It's fine.
But you just got a Peloton. But don't I forget.
I'm L.A. poor. And that's what I am.
Yeah.
But anyway, we used to go to the Pacific Theaters, which they were in
on Winnetka?
Yeah.
I used to go to that one sometimes too.
So good. But anyway, we would sneak into the movie theater back way because we couldn't afford like movie tickets.
Even the rich kids at private school did that.
Oh, fuck yeah. It was fun. It was also so easy. Like I remember I went to go see like the SpongeBob movie. Mm-hmm. Like we like just fucking went for it and like
yeah.
went in. It's just such an easy movie. This is so bad. Don't do this. But it's just such an easy movie theater to like go in and
That would be the Pacific Theaters on Winnetka in the San Fernando Valley, everyone, in case you're wondering.
If you were a cop, I didn't do anything.
We did nothing.
But anyway, you know, we'd go and we'd bring our own snacks. I'd bring like cut mm-hmm. mango with like lime and tahini and like just sit there.
Sure.
Because like it was the only movie theater in the valley that like did not take reserved seating.
Yeah.
You could just sit anywhere.
Yeah.
Because reserved seating was getting really big at the time, guys.
Yeah, the AMC 16 on Topanga also mm-hmm. didn't reserve for
but
a
they
long
were
time.
Strict as fuck.
Yeah, had, like, it was hard to get into that movie yeah. theater.
And also like the AMC in Fallbrook was also really hard
the
to get
the one that replaced
to.
The Lemley.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is an LA podcast and anyone's confused. Monica and I are from LA, yeah. from the Val.
And now I go to the Arclight in Hollywood or the AMC in Burbank.
Never the Arclight Pasadena in the city that you live in.
They don't have good snacks.
Oh shit. Oh wow.
Anyway, where do you go?
I go to the Arclight Hollywood, the Vista. Mm-hmm. I've been to the Los Feliz 3 a couple of times.
Is it nice?
I mean it's like fine. It's cool if you appreciate like a smaller theater, mm-hmm. like a three screen theater. I've been to the Arclight Pasadena a few times. I just smacked the microphone. And then because I used to work at the Americana, I would like try and see all the new movies. Yeah. So sometimes the only movie time I would be able to get would be like 20 minutes after my shift ended.
Shit.
So I would just walk over to the... I think it is a Pacific Theater. The Pacific Glendale, I think it is.
Is that what it is? I always thought it was a Regency Theater. No, or is that the one in Calabasas?
I think that's the Calabasas one. Mm.
We live in Los Angeles.
And the one at LA Live, I think, is Regency. I think. Oh, it's Regal.
Regal,
that's
okay,
what
it so
is.
Okay, so it was the one in between Regency and Pacific is Regal.
Yeah.
That's
But it's a Pacific Theater at the Glendale, at the Americana, so like I would just walk over right after my shift and go see a movie. I know.
I miss going to go see those, man.
I miss it too. Like, I don't miss working retail, but I do miss being like, oh, I'm not doing anything tonight, and, you know, like fucking... I think I saw like mid-90s there. It's like mid-90s is playing. Let's go see
fuck
it.
Fuck mid-90s.
I love that movie. Shut the fuck up.
Beanie Feldstein is the superior Feldstein.
Oh my God. We are not getting into this conversation today.
Fuck Jonah Hill. Just kidding. He's so fucking good, especially in The Wolf of Wall Street. Jonah, don't at me. I'm sorry. I think we should end this. We need to end this.
Yeah, I think we need to end now. All right, guys. Subscribe, rate, please. Please email us. You have something to say.
Yeah. Tell us your if you've met a daddy. Tell us, you know, if you have a question about movies, not about movies, send them in.
Yeah, if you're just like, Jessica, I just matched with this guy on Bumble and I don't know what to say to him. Ask us that.
Ask
I don't
Jessica,
care.
Because I don't know what the fuck I
was. Regardless, you can ask us anything.
Anything.
Guys. We're like your BFFs.
But like, we don't know you.
But not.
All anyway, right. As and always.
As always.
Don't sue us, Daddy Favreau.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Love you.
All right, love you.
Bye, Monica.
Bye. Bye.